Okay, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and I apologize calling you from Northern California. My name is Carl Johnson. I'm the chairman of the Clark County Planning Commission. These planning commissions meetings will be held in a hybrid format, and the public is encouraged to participate in the following ways. Of course, you may attend in the sixth floor training room, the Public Service Center at 1300 Franklin Street. And please note that these meetings, there's no testimony is taken at these work sessions. You may also attend virtually via WebEx, and that is by phone or computer mobile device. The WebEx link, phone number, and WebEx details will be posted to the Planning Commission meetings at least 1 week prior. And if you need to get that, you can look on the at wa.gov/PC. So tonight, we will be hearing from Oliver and Jose regarding the comp plan update and any comments from the Planning Commission. And then, of course, we'll adjourn. So with that said, Oliver, are you there, or Jose?
Yes, I am here. Planning Commissioner Carl and the chair. Yes, I am here, and Jose is here as well.
Okay, that's great. So can we start off with the comp plan update?
Yes, good evening, Planning Commission members. For the record, my name is Oliver Ojiako, Community Planning Director, and with me this evening is Jose Alvarez. He's our Land Use Program Manager, and he will be giving the presentation. And both of us are here to answer questions in addition with our legal counsel. This is very similar to the presentation we had with the Clark County Council. This is really trying to bring the Planning Commission up to speed as to where we are. And the information or the numbers that we will share with you is not yet firmed up. We are still having conversation and discussion with our local city partners to consider their input and review of the data before we do the final allocation of population and employment and projection that the council have already made a decision on. We also have state planning tool or housing tool that we are using to allocate housing. We are required to use that tool. We'll go over that. The input into what we are going to be presenting you are twofold. One is based on the population growth that the council have already chosen. The way that the tool we are using is set up is that you have to plug in that number, then it will give you some on housing, how many number of units you have to plan in different income bands. In that tool, they're also showing us where we are in terms of existing housing units and how much more we have to plan for in that income band. So without much ado, let me turn it over to Jose Alvarez, and I know there may be some others online, and we are here to answer questions. Like I said, some of these numbers are not yet firmed up because we're having discussion with our city partners on minor issues, but we will get there. Thank you, Jose.
All right, thank you, Oliver. As Oliver mentioned, this is very similar to the presentation we gave to Council January 17th, I believe. We go to the next slide. So essentially, we're going to go over the background of the project, where we are, and then go through the allocation methodology, as Oliver mentioned, for the population, housing, and employment. And sort of some next steps. Next slide. So here you can see that the circled item in orange, the countywide planning policies and population allocation is where we are now. We've gone through the other checked items, and like Oliver mentioned, we're updating the vacant buildable lands model and working with the jurisdictions to complete that and then go through the allocation process. And then you can see the next step in the process is looking at sort of the scope for the EIS and the alternatives, and then the progression through the rest of the update process that culminates with adoption in June of 2025. There is a bill to sort of extend this to December of 2025, but that's still at the legislature and hasn't been finalized for the Clark County and other jurisdictions that are required to complete their process by June 30th of 2025. Next slide, please. All right. So this is just a summary of some of the decisions that council has made to date: the public participation plan and the preliminary scope of work. Was a hearing in March of last year. The population projection was adopted in May of 2023, and then the employment projection in August of last year. Next slide.
Pardon me, Jose. Jose, these are decisions that have been made by council,
correct?
Right?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks. Just wanted to get that in there.
Okay. Yep. So the population allocation, next slide. So these are just some of the first two are the sort of methodologies that we've considered in the past. And really, it's the proportion of vacant buildable lands as the third option there that we've used historically since 1994, and that we're proposing to use going forward in conjunction with the new tool that Commerce has developed to feed into that housing analysis planning tool that I will show you in a moment. Next slide. So some of the considerations for the allocation, essentially the consistency with the comp plans, like I mentioned, the forecast that have been already adopted, both for population and employment. The big component is that VBLM capacity. There are some instances where we're looking at flexibility within the vacant buildable land model. One example would be sort of the development that the City of Vancouver has planned for the Heights area. The model excludes all publicly owned land from for having any capacity going forward. So the city bought that property with the expectation of it being redeveloped. And so what we decided to do is create an override where we're documenting what the reason is for changing the assumptions on that site area, and then documenting that and including that potential capacity in the VBLM totals. One of the other assumptions that we were looking at is that urban-rural split historically had been 90% of the growth would go to the urban area and 10% to the rural. Based on some of the information in the buildable lands report from 2020-21 was an observation that the about 94% of the growth went to the rural area and 6%, or I'm sorry, 94% urban and 6% rural. So we were proposing to update that that figure to 95-5 split. And then one of the new sort of more prescriptive tools that Commerce has developed is this housing analysis planning tool that really requires jurisdictions to plan for their growth in a way that considers income band ranges, which hasn't been done at, you know, anywhere throughout the state, but at the local level in particular, that's not the way we've sort of done things historically. So that's a significant change in how we're doing things. Next slide. So as I mentioned, the VPLM update, one of the things that the old model was using was it was based on comprehensive plan designation. So say in our urban low in the unincorporated area, we have five zones, R15, R16, R175, up to R120, and we lumped those all together previously. Now we're separating those out and creating, or the model is estimating capacity based on those zones as opposed to the one lump, the consolidated urban low comp plan designation. So it's a refinement that I think is a good improvement. It gets a little more accuracy for that specific area. We've had conversations with the jurisdictions for them to provide us sort of zoning the estimates of you know, what is most likely to occur in each of those zones. So there's a range of responses we've gotten from that. There's something based on the work that we're doing on housing, the implementation of HB 1220 is to review our zoning and try to add additional capacity. And so we're accounting for that in this model as well. You know, the allowance of duplex, triplex, fourplex in the urban low single family zones is being captured as part of that update that's going to go to council in March. I think I mentioned earlier the overrides that we're documenting, that we're several jurisdictions have had planning efforts that they've undertaken and they're not reflected in the model, and so we're documenting those and sort of accounting for the capacity that that creates based on some of the work the jurisdictions have already done. Let's see. Yeah, and yeah, next slide. All right, so so these are population estimates created by our county demographer using the 2023 OFM county total. The state, when they do their population estimates, they provide us information based on city jurisdiction. And so we use our GIS county demographer to convert that into estimates by UGA and to provide us an UGA total. So what this chart is reflecting is so the county total, 527,400 number, the county population in 2045 that's been chosen was a 718,154. 5% of that total is that 78,000, and then the remainder would be 639,000. Well, let me take that back. The 78,000 isn't 5%. The middle chart is that 5%. Overall, it's about 13% is what the rural population is relative to the entire county population. So in the middle there, the 181,216 figure is how much growth is expected over the next 20-year period that would occur in the urban growth boundaries. Next slide. So here again is the population estimates broken down by urban growth area, with the exception of Vancouver, the city of Vancouver. We modified that to account for their what the OFM population was reflecting for them as of April 1 of 2023, which is that 199,600 number. So the percentages that the allocation of growth at 181,000 figure, these are based on allocation based on the ratio of vacant land in the VBLM. So by UGA, these could change over time as we're still working through those numbers with the jurisdictions, but the total numbers should add up. So there may be some variation or change incrementally within the UGAs for that 2023 to 2045, but overall those numbers will add up to the total for 2045. Next, yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is Jack Haroon. Quick question. What is it on this chart? Is there, and maybe I'm just missing, is there just a general county area included in this number, or is this, am I missing the unincorporated portions on the population?
So that's within the UGA. So oh,
that is the Vancouver,
yeah.
UGA or the
so,
UGA.
Yeah. Essentially it's Battleground City plus their unincorporated area as an example. It's both. And we split out the Vancouver City and UGA because it's such a big area. But everything else is just the UGA total, city plus UGA.
So to clarify, there is technically, like under this formula, if you're looking at a map, the entire county.
Except for the rural, there's no rural in this, it's just urban.
Okay, this is just urban. I guess
correct.
That was my question.
Yep.
So there's no urban, okay.
Yeah,
my bad.
Yeah. Next slide. So this is a background on the factors used by the Department of Commerce, sort of to estimate housing need, and that results in the housing analysis planning tool that they've created, which has housing needs projections for each of the counties planning under the Growth Management Act. And on the right-hand side, that table, those housing units by income band is really the kind of focus of some of the planning work that's gonna have to occur after the allocation's made, and those, the distribution by income band is what's gonna require a lot of work for the jurisdictions to try to show that they can accommodate housing units in those different income bands. And I'll show you what that looks like in a second, but sort of some of the assumptions that have gone into that tool that Commerce has developed is sort of a 6% vacancy rate, sort of consideration of second homes, and a future household size that is much smaller than what we currently have and what we've experienced in the most recent past. It's, I think, at 2.44 persons per household, where we're currently at about 2.66. You look at that 718,000 total overall, and just changing the persons per household is the equivalent of about 17,000 housing units. The other item there is also showing that housing need for emergency housing and permanent supportive housing. Next slide. This is the difficult slide to see. So this is the housing needs allocation tool that Commerce has developed. And so it has sort of the three steps where you can choose a jurisdiction. So Clark County selected there under step one, the projection year is 2045. And then step three in the red there is the population target that the county has chosen, that the council has chosen, the 718,000. So that feeds into this chart, and it converts that population number into housing units. And so overall, that we need 309,000 housing units by 2045. And the estimated housing supply as of 2020 is 194,000 units. So the difference is 115,705. And then that's further broken down by those income bands, how many housing units we would need in each of those income bands. The one income band at the far right, the 120 plus, is included, but Commerce is not going to, they're not looking to evaluate us on that number. They're just including that to make the numbers add up. So demonstrating compliance is really meeting that 0 to 120, those income bands. Any questions on that slide before I go on? And the next slide. So this is similar information, but it's been updated to use 2023 sort of OFM estimate of housing supply. So in this, we accounted for the last sort of 3 years of growth in housing units. So now the total is no longer 115, but 103,000. And we have currently an estimated housing supply of about 206,000. Because the, you know, we don't have any data on whether those units, what income band those units were provided, we just subtracted them from the total and then from the 120% on the far right. So there could be some, you know, some modifications if jurisdictions can demonstrate whether they've provided housing units in the last 3 years that fit within those income bands, but it's not likely for most of the housing, but there may be some. Next slide, please. Again, so this is the same information. This time it's broken out by each, essentially, city and UGA, and then the Vancouver, the unincorporated area, and the rural area total, and then summarized by each of the big income bands as a total and what the percentage of that total is. What's not shown on here is that in order for the fields to populate, we had to provide the tool sort of an estimate, a breakdown of percentage allocation. And what we used in that was sort of the ratio of capacity that's in the vacant buildable lands model for each jurisdiction. So, again, that's one of the items that, you know, we're still trying to finalize with the jurisdictions. But based on the last model run, that's what this is reflecting. And so you can see here that this is sort of spread out. Commerce has provided two sort of allocation methods where method A here sort of tries to distribute that the allocation sort of evenly across the board with sort of no regard for what the existing amount of sort of low-income housing that a jurisdiction has currently provided. And so the second methodology sort of accounts for that. Next slide. So this is a summary of the previous slide where it just totals up what's 80% less of area median income and how many housing units would have to be provided. And you can see at the bottom there that it's that 55,000, which would make up 54% of the total of the 103,000. And then the 80 to 120 makes up about 19%. And then the greater than 120 is 27% of the total. Have any questions before I move on to the second methodology? All right. All right, so this chart is Commerce's method B, where the distribution of the housing need is done such that in 2045, there's more equity among jurisdictions in providing housing at the lower income levels. In this chart, the negative numbers in red indicate a surplus of housing in that income band based on the current number of units within that income band. So based on the numbers here, Vancouver has a surplus of housing units in that 50 to 80% range, and Camas has a surplus in that greater than 100 and greater than 120. You'll notice that greater than 120 is not in red, but you can see the negative number there. So, you know, based on that, within the city of Vancouver, there's a larger percentage of the housing, about 50%, that could be provided at greater than 120, 120% of the income band, because they've already provided at a lower level. And then the next chart, again, is just a summary of those income bands, and it's, you know, the total numbers are the same regardless of the method used, but how it's distributed varies pretty significantly, where you can see there that, you know, the Camas area would have to provide 89% of their housing in that less than 80%. And the city of Vancouver would only have to provide 25% of their total in that income band. In our conversations with the cities, there's I think a lot of cities were interested in sort of somewhere in between or towards method B. They wanted to be sort of get credit for the housing at the lower income bands that they've already provided. And again, we're not required to use either method. We could come up with our own, but as long as we provide the housing within those income bands, as prescribed, it's how it's allocated is up to the local jurisdictions. Next slide. So now this is the employment capacity and allocation by UGA. This table shows that the number of net new jobs based on sort of allocation method number three that we discussed earlier. The council chose to plan for a total of 269,000 jobs by 2045, and the Employment Security Department provided estimates of the net new jobs based on two baseline years. The first was for 88,100 new jobs from 2023 to 2045, and then one for the 2025 to 2045 period. Since the model is the 2023 model, we've included the numbers derived from the 2022 baseline year to more closely match the 2023 VBLM capacity. So according to the 2023 vacant lands model, the county has capacity there for 64,372 jobs. There may be some increases, decreases, depending on some finalization with the VBLA numbers for some jurisdictions. As Oliver mentioned, there was some changes in the Washougal UGA, where we're showing them as having employment capacity, but in a plan that they sort of adopted after the 2016 plan, the underlying zoning wasn't changed, but they were looking at those areas for primarily residential with some commercial. And so we anticipate that sort of their total employment capacity would be reduced based on that. The other thing here is that in the allocation, we account for a reduction of the government jobs, since the model excludes publicly owned property, except for ports. So we've reduced that by the 8,600, and there is a couple of other factors that we're looking at related to employment. The percentage of employment in the rural area that we were able to get from a census tool, and then also looking at how to account for folks that are working from home. And so those are some considerations that will probably be brought forward before we finalize the numbers. So next slide. So in terms of next steps, once we complete the VBLM and do the allocation with the jurisdictions, we're going to move into sort of the EIS alternative land use scenarios. And we're going to, based on those alternatives, do some transportation modeling, and then also have our SEPA threshold determination, where we're going to look at issuing an EIS. And so as we get further along, we're going to have sort of a high level view of how the jurisdictions are looking at accommodating their growth, and then more specifics and details that will show how they're going to go about that, whether through upzoning and what areas would be upzoned, or if there's any expansion, what areas would be considered for expansion. And so those would be studied in our draft environmental impact statement as we move to a preferred alternative. going as we move progress through the process. And that concludes the presentation. If you have any questions.
Any questions, gentlemen?
Any questions?
I'll start, Ms. Selden.
Okay.
So okay. This is a lot to digest.
Really?
And it's been mentioned, and you guys have said it, and I've seen it on the, like the City of Vancouver sent their comments about all this mandate for, based on median income is all new.
Right.
Trying to get my arms around this is very difficult, because what it's suggesting is that there's going to be a lot of rezoning to make, to free it, to get more capacity, like on the employment. There's about a 20% gap. So you're going to have to rezone to allow for more employment. And yeah, to me this is overwhelming. And the considerations of what might or might not happen by moving forward on this,
mm-hmm.
It's huge.
Yes.
You agree.
Yes, you're right, Planning Commissioner Walden. That is why we are still having conversation with our local jurisdictions. There are going to be some, you know, trade-off. That is why we really wanted to, you know, coming up with a policy, as you know, that one is generating policies much easier. We need to get this technical stuff really nailed down. Before we move into developing land use alternative and so forth. There's several, you know, some different ways to look at the jobs. You know, with the advent of the COVID, some people or some folks are working from home, so you may not need additional land per se. There are other factors that we need to consider. We don't know whether the trend is going to continue. There are some folks who will be working from home. One of the things that we don't know is, if you look at the rural area, for example, we have to be very careful, because those that may live in the rural area, they could be teachers. They could be folks that work in the forestry or other areas. They may be part of that government sector. So there's a couple of things we have to look at carefully before we really arrive at what is the true capacity and how can we, what other factors do we need to consider. We cannot rule out that, you know, some areas are going to redevelop, areas that we are saying now are developed or built, whether it's a small, office with a huge parking lot, they could redevelop into something else that generates jobs. So there's so many other things that we need to consider. I don't think that the job numbers have been firmed up in terms of capacity, but I agree with you that what the state is asking us to plan for in terms of housing units, we haven't done that in the past. They're also including the deficit that we have not kept up with. So all those is increasing, those factors are increasing the number of units we have to plan for. Will it lead to some jurisdiction considering upzoning? Potentially, but that is not a decision that county staff will make for them. That will be the function of the city and their council to make those calls where the opportunity exists. They may be the same, you know, Clark County is unique that we have a huge unincorporated area that develop as if we are a city. There may be opportunity, I don't know where, but we don't have many transit nodes where we can consider rezoning some properties along the transit nodes. We also don't have a lot of multi-family zone lands where you may say, yeah, right now our highest density in the multi-family is 43 units. Will the council or the community consider upzoning that? I don't know. But you're right that there is huge gap that we have to meet. And this tool, the state have said you're required to use them. So it's gonna be a good conversation to have, and I think the cities will determine. We know also that there may be some cities that may not want growth. What do we do? There may be some cities that may want more growth, but you have to pay Peter, you have to rob Peter to pay Paul. So we have to find a way to say, okay, where would that growth come from to give it to somebody else who wouldn't want it? You know, so there's gonna maybe some trade-off that may happen, but what the state is also saying is that the option A that Jose showed you will provide like a level playing field, if you will, where everyone gets their own share, because some cities are carrying the load, if you will, in terms of multi-family and other type of housing. They're just like Vancouver in the past, Washougal as well. So, yeah, so, you know, they may look at method A and said, you know, let's take a method B, which shows the effort that we have made in the past and recognize that that's what this option B provide. That's where some cities may lean to, but I want to get there with them before we present the information for council to approve. Immediately we agreed on the allocation, it's up to the cities to go decide how to go about providing and accommodating the growth that is allocated to them. I mentioned this the last time I was here for some of the planning commission members who have gone through the planning process before. What we have to, what we used to do in the past is just allocate population and employment, and the cities will decide how to accommodate that. This is a little bit different, required by the recent changes made by the legislature in terms of housing, that we have to look at zoning, we have to provide housing based on these income bands. So we have been trying to, have dialogue with Commerce to see how they arrive at this income bands for Clark County. I think there is some support and they are supporting it, but I'm not gonna, refute their definition and where they put us. I'm sure other counties, King County, Snohomish, Whatcom and Skagit, every one of the counties fully planning under GMA are using the same tool. So we all know that housing is a big deal, housing affordability. It's not only unique to Clark counties across the West Coast, but we have to do something to find a way to respond to that. So I agree with you. Some people have said, we are planning based on a spreadsheet. it is what it is by using this tool, but some decisions will have to be a top decision made by the cities on how to accommodate the growth. I agree with you.
Jack, do you have anything?
Yes, I do. So just kind of questions on some assumptions. On the vacant building lands model, what is excluded? I know, is it government-owned property, parks, school? What's the totality of that list that's excluded from that model?
I can share with you, we have a methodology that I think lists all of the things that are excluded, but publicly owned land is really the big.
Okay, so because I know that wasn't done in the past, like parks land or school land in the
has
past,
always
I think
been,
was included.
Has always been excluded.
So it's all excluded now?
Always.
It has always
been excluded.
Is environmentally sensitive land excluded?
So there's are we looking different at assumptions for that. Critical lands, we have an exclusion. For critical lands, I think that's 50%.
Okay.
Is
that industry based on current code, or is that kind of a general assumption? Because I know from some
with
of
the exclusion deep, for critical?
On the critical land, yeah, because I think the yields on some of that were in question from the county assumption versus the industry assumption of what their actual yields on land were.
Is that the half a dozen or dozen subdivisions that they provided information on?
Probably. I mean, that was from some of the discussions I've had from that.
I think there's a misunderstanding of how the critical lands deduction works. The model is looking at sort of all the critical lands. And so a lot of times it overestimates what's critical. And so when you go do a project, you're looking on that, there's hydric soils on that, but it's not wetland. And so there's not really a constraint on the property. And so, but the model thinks that it is. And so when we see that development on there, that's a lot of where that 50% comes from.
Okay. And then how do you, is there any jurisdictional correction for like the city of Ridgefield, which has a lot of developable land or used being gobbled up rather quickly, but they require a lot to be dedicated back to them versus other jurisdictions? So they have a higher percentage that's reserved for trails or parks, and which eats into quite a bit of that. Is that calculated since they have such a large portion?
No, I think that was something that was brought up when we were doing the buildable lands report and taking a look at that. And it's we have a 31.5% set aside for infrastructure that includes everything. And so that's countywide. And so it's not jurisdiction specific.
Okay, it's just kind of, and I know you guys, you have a broad brush that you have to paint.
Yeah.
On the housing map, I was wondering, so I see a lot of the percentage stuff,
mm-hmm.
But a little bit it gets lost in the details because it's 80% of AMI.
Right.
And that doesn't mean a lot, especially communicating even to me, which I'm, mm-hmm. I have a kind of a guesstimate of what that is. Is it possible we can start assigning numbers to that of between those between 50 and 75,000 and between 20 and 30,000, and then also including what the actual rent number is supposed to be for those individuals? Because I know, I think that it's like 30% or 33% of your total housing should be that, because it's really hard to digest of like, well, what are you saying? It's like, well, we need to provide housing for 40% of our population at $800 a month or less. Because it's going to help us under, like, because
right.
I don't even fully understand what is being asked on those numbers. So it'd be really, really helpful for me, and I'm sure to most people on that.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Because I don't know, like, what are we, is a $1,200 a month apartment okay, or is it too much? And for how many people is it too much for?
Yeah.
How do we, when we look at like something like Camas that has the 89% of their housing needs to be below 80% of AMI.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand, like, how does that, I guess, get resolved? I think Oliver mentioned it a little bit, but is there a lever or a mechanism that, because part of it is like, I know Canvas, they're structurally, they're set up to be very expensive to build in just by their fees and their step systems and a bunch of things that they require, fire sprinkler systems that immediately push any type of housing outside of subsidized housing out of those bands. So how does that, what's the tool there?
How do you achieve that goal?
How do you achieve that goal when you're like, when your start cost is
right?
significantly higher than everybody else in the county.
I think that's a question for the city.
Okay. I didn't know if there was a county mechanism or something that...
No, I think Jose is correct. That's a question for the city, but I take your point. We will try our best to look at that average median income and be able to provide you what the ranges are or what that means in dollar amount, right? We know what the median income is here in Clark County, so we can be able to provide you that information. In terms of whether there will be any consequences for some of the cities if they don't meet that, as I mentioned last time, I don't think the county will be mandating anything. However, it will be the responsibility of the jurisdictions to show how they're going to meet that. I can say that because of the way that this tool is structured and the way that the bill is written, some of the smaller cities, particularly like Vancouver, Commerce, and Washougal, for example, the cities, as you probably are aware, under the House Bill 1110 are supposed to be providing 6 plexes in their single family zone, and I believe 4 plexes in the Commerce and Washougal. I'm not the one that would tell them you have to. They have to show how they're going to allow for 4 plexes in their single family zone. You know, and I know that it's very expensive for some folks to live in that can afford to live in Commerce. But when this allocation is completed, they will be making that decision whether they're up zone, whether they allow for townhouses, or whether they allow for other different housing types to get them there. All the state is saying is that you have to plan for it and show how you're going to demonstrate that. I believe the bill is even written to say that you can come up with your development regulation on how to meet that 6 months after the adoption of the plan. But I believe there are some bills now that are being introduced to say they want to put a caveat that is being monitored through the build up section 215. We have to be able to show every 5 years, how are you meeting that? And I have our legal counsel here. If you're not meeting that, there is also a requirement that you come up with some reasonable measures on how to meet that. Whatever that reasonable measures is, I don't know. But it may mean you have to rezone some areas, you have to do something differently. Next time, you will not be able to expand your UGB. So there's some mechanisms. Plus, if you don't show how you're going to meet that, there is also your plan may be subject to appeal, requiring you to correct what you need to do through the courts or through the growth management hearings board and courts. So I will leave it at that, but it's going to be up to the cities to determine how they're going to accommodate that. But the county won't be mandating that.
So the stick is more from the state standpoint, so to speak, or enforcement is more state directed. So two last questions. So are there any housing type targets within these numbers? Are we saying they can all be apartments, or do we have any actual community planning aspect of, look, we want 40% to be home ownership, and we want of that, or 60% home ownership, and of that 60%, we want 50% to be single families and 40% to be townhomes and 10% to be condos? Or is there any kind of mechanism or anything that we've talked about including in this planning?
Not at this point. I know Commerce, one of the things is sort of getting that transition from, you know, the zoning and the sort of housing types and that typology for, like, you know, that 100 to 120 standard market rate housing 80 to 100. You might have the townhouses. Below that is probably apartments. And at the aggregate level, that's kind of where we are, but we haven't gotten into any more specifics about the percentages in terms of owner occupancy or not, or I mean ownership versus renter.
So okay, yeah. I don't know. I think from my standpoint, it'd be nice to be able to say, to put some numbers to that of like, our goal is to provide X amount of single family residences and our home ownership opportunities versus apartments will never be homeowner owned, right? So I think it's important in such a large plan to include the kind of community that we want. Do we want a community of renters long term, or do we want people that are, you know, have ownership in the county? And it's the greatest way to build wealth, you know. So, but if we just default to let the market decide, which would be apartments, basically, it turns into more of a corporate owned housing situation. And so that would be my, it would be nice to kind of put some thought into that and put that into our planning documents. Then other one, my other question was, we have a pretty strong shortage, a pretty large shortage of industrial lands or commercial lands, like large parcel commercial lands. And I didn't know if that at all was being considered in the commercial land vacancy.
Right, and it doesn't recognize size differential. It's all summed up. And I know that CRDC has had an issue with that in terms of different parcel sizes, but the model doesn't contemplate that differential. But I think there's some things we can do within our zoning, where I know past experiences, we put urban holding on properties when they're sort of brought into the urban growth boundary. They can't be divided any further. But as soon as we lift the urban holding, there's no minimum parcel size for industrial land. So those can be chopped up into, you know, 1-acre lots for an industrial subdivision. And so there's no protection once it gets brought in that it will stay that way. And so we do a lot of the protection early on, but once the gate's lifted,
yeah. Thank you.
Any more questions? Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, any more questions? Yeah, you know, like I said, it's the elephant. Take a little bite. And if I learned anything from my past years, gentlemen, it's, you know, as we tighten this up, the information gets a bit more clear. And yes, it is a lot right now. But I would say thank you, Jose, for just kind of starting us out down this path. And I learned not to react early in the stages. So I hope that makes sense, you guys. But good questions. And is there any more questions for Jose or Oliver? With that said, Oliver, do you have anything for us that would be good for the order, by any chance?
No, I think if you look at the council grid, you will see that they have an interview, I believe, tomorrow. Yes. 8:45 a.m. They will be interviewing candidates for members or some members of the community to be appointed to the planning commission. So if you're free, you're welcome to tune in and listen to the interview. It's likely that the council will make a decision after they come out of the executive session. So that's what I can share with you. We schedule a hearing with the council February 6th. I'm going to ask for that hearing to be continued. That hearing was supposed to be on their location. As I indicated earlier, we are still having a conversation with our local jurisdictions. In the coming weeks, all this information, particularly the current vacant buildable lands output, will be put out for other stakeholders to see the information, review it, and I'm sure there's going to be questions raised. But that's the tool we have been using since 1994 and continue to update and, you know, refine that. And just as you were saying, Commissioner Walden, it is complex, but, you know, our GIS staff have reviewed that. There is more confidence in the model and the staff we have running it, not that we've done in the past. I would take our GIS staff over any other county's GIS. But having said that, the information will be out there for the public to view that. We are looking at March, is it March 5th, for the housing code update that came before the Planning Commission. When we went to council, they listened to you, they want us to go back and have additional refinement, and we have done that. Are we 100% there? There are still some issues that the council will resolve one way or the other. So you can also tune in on March 5th to listen to that hearing. I hear what you're saying, Commissioner Jack Haroon. Some of this information, as complex as it may be, the VBLM is the tool we have been using, and you will see when we publish this that what is excluded and how we have treated critical land. Critical land have always been one area where we have been dialoguing with the development community on how we calculate that. You know, even our local jurisdictions will tell you that we are, our critical coverage is estimating critical land, to be honest with you. I'm getting that from our local jurisdiction. You know, you may look at Barrow Grand and it's just, you know, fingers all over the place, but Barrow Grand is still developing. So having said that, that is all I have. And we will come back as we make progress. You know, I am concerned that some of the schedule we put is slipping. But I think we will catch up as we go through this phase. It's really the complex phase. As soon as we go through this now, the cities will be in a position to at least provide us conceptually what direction they would like to grow, how they're going to accommodate the growth allocated to them. That will also come to you for you to review and make a recommendation to council before we go to council. Thank you, Commissioner Carl Johnson. Do you want anything?
I just wanted to say, and there's a Planning Commission hearing in 2 weeks on the biannual code amendments.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Carl, it's good to see you. I know you're calling from.
I'm down south. I should be back for the next meeting. Let's hope so.
All right. It's good to see you. It's good to see all of you.
Yeah, good to have everybody back. I know we're a little short-handed, but it was good. Good questions to cover, gentlemen. So, is there any other questions for the order, gentlemen? Eldon? Jack? Anybody else? All right. Great, gentlemen. That said, that's an adjournment. Have a great evening.